Hello and welcome to episode 284 of the Retro...
283!
See, Dean has just said I'm allowed to say the episode number and I got it wrong. No, I didn't. I'm just winding you up. Dean Swain, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you, good sir?
Very, very well. Mads Christensen, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, thanks.
So, Dean, let's just establish the rule on numbers, because I love a number. I do love numbers, but you've said I'm not allowed to say the episode number anymore. Well, and then, seconds before we start recording, you say I'm allowed to say?
Yeah, I was expecting you to get it right.
A leader is consistent, Mr. Swain.
Well, as I was here, I thought I'd supervise, and I was hoping you'd say the right number, but no, not you.
So what episode is it exactly?
283. Although, to be honest, as I've mentioned before, the episode numbers mean nothing because we've done more episodes than 283. Yeah. Mm.
But we are coming up to a centenary, aren't we? 300.
I guess so. And younger shows have already beaten us to that, if you go by episode number. But a lot of our early episodes were like 20 and a half. Or
yeah.
Thanks to Mr. Goodoy for that numbering system.
Yeah, let's not bring back half episodes, eh? So, probably not worth doing. But are we going to do anything for episode 300?
We're going to record an episode.
Yeah, that is a given. It only feels like 5 minutes ago we had episode 200, doesn't it?
It wasn't that long ago, was it, really?
Yeah. A much shorter gap between 200 and 300 than 100 and 200.
Yes.
For sure. So, Dean, what have you been up to?
Very little in terms of gaming, yet again. I'm starting to sound like a broken record. What have I been playing? I have been playing the 32X on the Mister, because there's a new core out for that.
How is that?
Yeah, it's not completely perfect, although saying that, there has been updates this week which has fixed the sound, because one of the chips was running too fast. So if you play like Star Wars, you got the speech was very fast, which was quite comical.
Mm.
General Akbar, or what's his name? The fishy-looking dude in Star Wars.
Yeah, sounds right, Akbar.
Yeah, Akbar. Yeah, he was sounding more like a chipmunk. But they fixed that.
So they can just patch these things, can they? Just like patching software?
Yeah, and the developer, he lives out in Ukraine. So the fact that this was released at all with the current troubles is, you know, it's a bit of a miracle. He's working on a Sega Saturn core as well. And I think the 32X and the Sega Saturn use the same processor, so that's why this core came out, because a lot of people didn't think it would be possible.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's out there, and it's working quite well. There's one or two games that still have a little bit of trouble, but you know, I've got the real hardware, so I can put them next to each other and see if there's any problems. But, yeah, very, very impressive.
Nice. And how's the PS1 core coming along?
Yeah, that's nearly finished. Really, really good. Very good.
Yeah. It's good.
I need to try that at some point. Plug in the controllers from the PlayStation Mini. It'll be
you could do that. Yeah, I'll send you the files that you need, because it's not been released officially yet, Mads.
So there's
nightly files that they do, and it's being updated, you know, every week. So when I played it, when did I play it? It's probably last weekend. I played Driver, and that was a game that used to crash quite often, and it didn't crash anymore. And I actually got past the car park, which makes a change. Remember that training mission?
Yeah, I remember it well. Yeah.
I find it took about 10 goes, I think, on the trot, but I finally done it.
It's quite hard.
Yeah.
So you can download work in progress versions of these cores, can you?
Yeah.
It's good, isn't it?
I mean, it's quite interesting to see the development, you know, progress quite often as well. People are reporting bugs all the time. It's impressive. It's really, really good.
And there's an Atari ST core, is there?
There is indeed.
That could come in handy for some people.
Yes, definitely. Very good core, actually.
Good. What about you, Mads? Mads' new hardware, Christensen?
Yes. What have I been up to? Mostly...
spending money?
Spending far too much money. And playing playing on my new Steam Deck. Really loving that piece of kit.
It's nice.
Really nice machine. So, yeah. Playing with that. I don't remember if I've mentioned this on an RA episode because I've recorded on two other podcasts in the past week, but I've been playing all the way through Milkmaid of the Milky Way on the Steam Deck, for example. And that is a wonderful little point-and-click adventure, pixelated point-and-click adventure. And it's a perfect experience for guys like us because it's 2-3 hours and then it's all done. So, really enjoying that, the Steam Deck. It's a really, really nice piece of kit. The only gripe I had with it was the noise from the fan, but I heard that it's actually fixed in software now. So the next time I turn it on, there should be an update.
Oh, so it was a software thing?
It was probably trying to hold it at a too low a temperature. That was unnecessary, so they've just adjusted that in software, I guess.
Oh, cool. That's really good if they can do that.
Mm.
Did you ever play that game, that point-and-click game Roki that I suggested? That's made by a Norwegian guy.
Yeah. I'm actually playing that on the deck right now as well because I played it for an hour or two when you gave it to me, and then I've picked it up again now. It's really that works perfectly on the deck as well.
And is that one that's down as being optimized for the Steam Deck?
Yes.
Okay.
It is actually.
Oh, I am really, really keen to get my hands on one. Mine now says Q3.
Really? Oh, and you haven't got your email to actually order it yet.
No, and I'm really paranoid that I'm going to miss it, like it's going to go into junk or something like that. So I'm checking every day, logging into Steam to see if I've got anything. So the way I'm doing it, I'm just searching for Steam Deck and making sure that my reservation is still there.
I think when you get the mail, you have 48 hours, something like that.
Yeah, it's
and then
nothing.
You'll be back at the bottom of the queue, the end of the queue.
Oh, so how much are these Steam Decks in, guys, for those
far
who don't
too
know?
Much.
Lots far of too money. Much.
What was it? I paid in euro 550 almost. Euro.
That was the most expensive, yes. And I've reserved the same one as well. But that is of the three models, that is the most expensive.
Mm.
And the difference, key difference, other than size, there is a nicer screen on the 512 gig one. Isn't
it? It's the same screen, but I think the layer of glass or whatever it is that's on top of it is some anti scratch.
Some kind of like tempered glass thing on top of it, is that?
Yeah, I think that's the main difference. And the reason that I chose it actually is that the disc is supposedly is an NVMe SSD, so it's a lot faster than the other models.
There's quite a big difference in price between that middle version, which has 256 gig of storage, and then the top version, which has the 512.
Mm.
It's quite a big price difference, maybe 150 quid.
Yeah. I think the first model is 420 euros, and I forget what the middle tier is, and the top one is 549 or something.
But it's a PC, and it's a handheld PC, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, it looks impressive, but what are you going to use it for mainly, emulation or another PC games?
So I'm going to be using it for both because I've got a huge Steam library. I don't know if you call them newer because a lot of these games are 20 years old that I'll be playing on it. But lots and lots of Steam games, PC games. But I immediately, of course, installed the Emulation Deck software as well. And that is just a really just emulation station front end and a retro arc core running in the background. And that runs really well on it as well. So at some point I'll tinker with that, but setting it up and getting all of the right BIOS files in place is always a pain, isn't it?
Yeah.
So right now only a select few of the emulators actually work because I haven't had the time to do that.
I mean, the games available on Steam now, I mean, God knows how many there are, but there are, you could get, if a game isn't on Steam, it's a rare occurrence, whether that be modern or old.
So speaking of Steam games, I should mention that I've been playing a bit of that Pangaroids that somebody posted about. Somebody who, it was a one or two man job doing that game, and it's free on Steam. It's actually quite good fun. I sunk an hour into that yesterday when I was supposed to go to bed. So it's really good fun. And that works really well on the Steam Deck as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a brilliant way to get through that huge library that many of us have on Steam, isn't it? Just having it just on the sofa so you can just dip in and dip out of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the instant on thing and being able to play it where I am is that that will mean that a lot of those small narrative experiences that I love, that I have hundreds of, I guess, on Steam, yeah. I'll finally try to chip away at those when I'm at the cottage, or I'm even playing it downstairs in the on the couch while the kids are watching telly.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Happy days. That sounds great.
Nice.
And you've also got a PS5 in the
and
same
I've
week.
I've also got a PS5, yes. I've tried it now, playing yeah. a PS4 game.
Horizon, PS4 game.
Yeah.
Horizon Zero Dawn?
Yeah, that's the only one I've tried it on. The kids have been using it. I can't get to it.
So you've got Horizon Forbidden West, haven't you? Have you got the... This is probably the wrong podcast for this chap, but I'll ask you anyway. So do you have the PS4 or the PS5 version of Horizon Forbidden West?
So right now I have both, because okay. the PS5 version came with the console when I bought it. But the PS4 version, there's a free upgrade to the PS5 version as well. So
oh, cool.
Yeah.
So you've got it twice?
Yeah, you could say that.
Yes. So good he owns it twice.
Mm.
Well, so you're kitted out then?
I am,
that's
truly.
It now. You're banned from buying anything new.
Have you got a PS5, Chris?
Yeah, mate, I got one at launch.
You have, yeah.
So yes, I wasn't... I just bought the Steam Deck and that was far too expensive. And I didn't want to buy the PS5 right now, but I finally had the chance and I've been looking to buy one for, well, since it launched a year and a half or 2 years ago.
It's unbelievable that they're still hard to get hold of.
Exactly. So I got this email and I just closed my eyes, ordered it immediately. And then literally the next day, the car broke down. So I'm a bit skint for cash right
great
now.
Great timing. Yeah.
There's one in my local CEX for £650.
Hmm.
It's amazing. 18 months after launch.
Yeah.
It is absolutely unbelievable that it's the scarcity is still fetching that kind of price.
Yeah.
I've been playing our community playthrough game as well as WHB in April. My main gaming escapade has been the original Final Fantasy. Hey, what a game. What
playing
a game.
Playing on the Famicom?
Playing it on the Famicom.
Nice.
And I finished it. I didn't use one save state.
Well,
and I tell you, that is a game, as much as I love it, and I really did love it, that has not aged well. There are many aspects of that game that most normal people would not be able to stomach.
How long did it take you, Chris?
I reckon I probably put about 25 to 30 hours into it over the course of...
Where did you find that kind of time?
An hour before bed.
Yeah.
An hour here and there. Just that kind of thing. Because we finished the main Horizon Zero Dawn game for playthrough, so it didn't have that to distract me. WHB I managed to get through. I've been playing the sequel, actually, which I'm sure we're going to talk about as well in a bit. So I've had this little gap, so I thought, right, I'm going to start Final Fantasy. To be honest, I didn't think I would get into it. And I thought I would end up playing one of the more recent, even the Pixel Remaster, which released last year. But I really did get into it. And if you're like me and you like numbers and you like seeing numbers go up, that's really all the game is.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Doesn't sound very good to me.
Because there's no story, really, of any note. And there's not a lot of variety. And you go from dungeon to dungeon, town to town, and you just watch the numbers go up as the hours tick by. And I loved it.
Sounds good, Dean.
Yeah, right.
Listen, you'll love this, Dean. People who listen to playthrough will probably have heard this by now. I was telling Mads this the other day, Dean. So I got to the final dungeon, the final boss, and the fact you can only save the game on the world map outside the dungeon.
Okay.
Got to the final dungeon. I've been through this dungeon already a couple of times to grind for some levels. So I kind of knew where it was going, but even if you know where you're going, it takes about 45 minutes to get through this dungeon up to the final boss.
You can't save.
You can't save in the dungeon. So you've just got to go through, you get to the boss. I got to the boss. On the boss's very first attack, he did this instant kill attack and wiped out my party completely. Game over.
Oh.
45, 50 minutes just completely and totally wasted.
Jesus.
But armed with that knowledge, I equipped them all with some anti-death stuff, and then the next time I did it, I beat them first time. But I had to go through the whole thing again. It's not for everyone.
That wouldn't be happening with me at all.
No.
It's not for me, I think.
No. But we are moving on to Castlevania next. the original Castlevania, which, again, I've only ever dabbled with. Just random little goes here and there.
Yeah, me too. That one I have actually played just a tiny bit, but that'd be good fun to try.
Yeah. Have you ever got anywhere with it, or have you just dabbled with it?
No, just fired it up and try to see what all the fuss was about, because a lot of people really like the Castlevania series, but never spent enough time with it, no.
Got some wall chicken?
Got some wall chicken, yes, yes.
As they say on Retro Game Squad.
Yes.
Have you ever played it, Dean?
I have played it. It's weird. With the NES, I think, because we got it quite late, every game I tried, and I could see that they were playable, you know, Mario Brothers, for example, Super Mario Brothers, I really enjoyed. But a lot of the games, they look so dated compared to what we were playing at that point.
We were well into the Amiga. It came out in 1990 in Europe, Castlevania.
Yeah, yeah. I remember my cousin bought the Turtles pack. I had played a few NES games in the arcade, because you used to have them in arcade sometimes.
Yeah, it was called the VS line, wasn't it, in the arcades, I think.
Play Choice?
Yeah, you had Play Choice and the VS.
Okay.
The Play Choice was the one where it was timed.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you put a pound in and you'd probably get 5 minutes if you were lucky. Yeah, it was very expensive. Idea. So I'd played a few NES games that way, and I think sometimes the Play Choice and the Versus versions were slightly different anyway. They might have been a bit harder or just slightly different. But yeah, like I say, when I was playing these games, as much as you can feel they're playable.
Yeah.
But technically, they were quite dated looking, you know, graphically and what have you. So,
yeah,
it didn't really hold my attention that long, but I have only got the attention of a gnat. So,
true that.
Absolutely. Right. Should we get into some news?
Let's not?
I've brought a couple of pieces to the table, which I would quite like to mention. Been enjoying my Evercade recently. I really like this thing that they're doing on the VS, where they're making available for a month at a time an indie game, which a curated indie game brought to the system. I forget the name of the game that was playable in April. It's a sequel or a spiritual successor to one of their indie heroes card games called Flea. I can't remember what it's called. Tapeworm's Disco Puzzle, that's it. Tapeworm Disco Puzzle.
Okay.
Really, really good. An arcade puzzler. Very, very good game. I love this idea of curation, where they are looking at what's on the indie scene and just giving you, for a month, here you go, guys. Go and have a go at that. And it is actually going to be on their Indie Heroes cartridge that they're releasing later this year. But for a month, you were able to play it for free. So I love that. And I love the fact that they are doing that. They're highlighting specific indie games. But they've just announced, their latest announcement is a two new arcade carts. We're going to have, and I'm just bringing this up, the Jaleco Arcade Collection 1 and the Gaelco. That's the second of those packs, because they released one at launch. On the Jaleco pack, we've got Rodland, the Astyanix, St. Dragon, 64th Street, A Detective Story, EDF, Air Defense Force, Avenging Spirit, Psy Battler, and P-47, The Phantom Fighter. And on the Gaelco, Big Karnak, Maniac Square, Squash, TH Strikes Back, Touch and Go, and World Rally 2.
So do you know any of those games from the second one? I mean, I know a handful of the first one. I mean, Rodland, St. Dragon, 64th Street, Earth Defense Force. Yeah, some games I recognize there, played before, but I don't remember any of the others.
Well, I know World Rally, when I spoke with the guys from Evercade last year, they were pretty excited about the original World Rally, which was on their Jaleco Arcade 1, because that was the first time it had ever had a home release in any form.
Yeah.
And they were saying how obscure it is and how difficult it was to kind of get right. So that's the only reason I've heard of World Rally, but no, the others, no.
Mm-hmm.
No. It's a voyage of discovery with these things.
Yeah, that's cool that they're shining some light on some lesser-known games as well.
Yeah. And they do say on the announcement, it says, due to the security placed on the arcade PCBs, these games have been difficult to emulate correctly. And these, again, are some of the first times that for some of these games, the first time they've ever had any kind of domestic release. So interesting that they seem to be focusing on games which maybe aren't easy to emulate on MAME and other emulators.
Yeah.
Which again kind of just increases the value. So I'm loving Evercade's work. I can't say I play my Evercade a lot, but I really, really am enjoying watching what they do. And I wish I had more time actually to dive into some of these games. Good work, Team Evercade. Keep it going. And then the second piece of news I wanted to mention, game preservation has been an oft-discussed topic on Retro Asylum over the years, and we've always lamented the big publishers for not taking their responsibilities seriously enough when it comes to preserving their assets, their published assets. Sony are stepping up to the plate. Sony do a lot of things which I don't like and I don't necessarily agree with, but one thing that is, I think, a positive step is they've just formed a game preservation team, and they've taken the head or one of the lead engineers on that team is a guy that they've recruited from Electronic Arts, who's been in that post for some years, and he gave a talk at GDC a few years back about what he does. And what's interesting about this game preservation is they're not only preserving the source code, but they're preserving all of the various assets that go into the creation of the game, so that if in future somebody could literally take it and build the whole thing again from scratch.
Mm.
So it goes actually nice. Beyond the code and the assets. It goes into things like, you know, the method of installation and the way it feels to play the game at the time. So a positive step. I suspect it's all being done alongside the launch of Sony's new PS Now and PS Plus service, which will bring back some PS1, PS2 and PS3 games.
Mm.
But anyway, a step in the right direction. Others should take a leaf from their book, because we can't lose these things.
No, that's true.
Yeah, unfortunately we do, don't we? That's the problem, you know. Many games over the years, that especially ones that don't get completed, are lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a shame.
And people are doing good work to shine lights on those. I mean, only this week, it wasn't really anything that registered on my radar, but I think it was this week or last week, Ubisoft announced that so many of their games are having their servers shut down. Far Cry, the original Far Cry, was one of those.
Okay.
Now, again, not really anything I suspect in these shores we're going to shed too many tears about, but it is just more examples of games which elements of those games forever now, it seems, are no longer playable.
Especially if they're only available via download originally.
Yeah.
And then they go missing.
Yeah. I've been getting a bit of FOMO in the past few days about the possibility of never playing Final Fantasy 14, which if you're in my shoes and like what I like, that is an amazing sounding game. But it's just the investment of time to go and really get into an MMORPG has always put me off. But I don't want to sit here in 10 years when those servers are shut down and think, oh man, I'll never now get to play that. So I've been contemplating tentatively stepping into the world of Final Fantasy 14, but yeah, it scares me to some extent.
Well, thankfully, that won't be a problem I'll be having.
Do you want to join me? We can party up, Dean.
Nah, yeah. You're all right, Chris. I'm washing my hair that night.
You could be a black mage. You might like it. So guys, have you got any news that you wanted to share?
I don't think I have. I don't think there's been a whole lot happening apart from Spectrum's 40th anniversary. There was an event held up in Birmingham yesterday, which sadly I couldn't attend, which would have been nice to have gone to. But yeah. No, other than that, I've not really seen much that's grabbed my attention.
Mads, anything that you wanted to share?
No. I think Dean already shared all the stuff about the new course for the Mister, so I think we've got the most important bits covered.
But on to the most important part of the podcast, thanking our lovely Patreons, of course.
Yes.
Dean wanted to read the whole list, didn't you, Dean?
No.
Should we take it in turns, then?
Did you hear last time?
It's the bit of the podcast that I forward to first before I go back and then listen to the rest of it.
I'm sure.
If ever I'm feeling a bit down, I've had a long day, I just put on one of those lists. It brightens everything. Although I don't know what I'm talking about, so I can't pronounce half these names either. I just think it's funny when you and Steve do it. Right, I'll go first, then Mads, then you, Dean.
Fair enough.
Are you ready? Damon Crockett.
Dylan Ark.
Bitmap Soft.
Alec Plint.
Mike's Retrotech.
Derek Young.
Dave Velociraptor.
Nick.
Howard Price.
Matthew Turner.
SEIC.
Adam Hind.
Chris O'Regan.
James Dunn.
Hans Crombean.
Raushi MSX.
And Guto Threadbear.
Chris Atwill.
Paul Bullard.
Harvey Watson.
Martin Jones.
Is it? Oh, it's me, isn't it? Ninjixel.
Tim Chidi Walker.
Ricardo Engel.
Adrian Nelson.
Heavy Metal Dawn.
James Bentley.
Tony Parkinson.
Gaz H.
Mal Woods.
The Red Crested Breagle.
Kanan Rince.
Lampson Worm.
Salvio Calabresi.
Mitsuyama.
Reese Wynn.
Clint, I love the C64 Humphrey.
Oh, no, you didn't read that one, right?
Mark Bullen.
Paul Ashton.
Chris Rowe.
John Shepard.
Lauren Gyald.
That'd be Giroux. Yeah, Deadlock.
Aaron Morpin.
Jim Orbitz IT.
John Veal.
Thomas Scuffham.
Andy Marsh.
Patrick Fust.
Lauren.
Andrew Gilmore.
Stephen Stuttart.
Matt Sullivan.
Darren Coles.
Gary Heather.
Edward Fitzpatrick.
Nick Lees.
And Blake Brett. What a wonderful list.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Big thank you.
I only butchered one of you.
Yeah, that was good.
It has the dice rolls, Dean. You got a lucky turn. they all need to fall to Mads because he's got that, you know, that Scandinavian lilt.
Exactly.
Allows him to pronounce these things.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, are you ready, guys, to move on to talking about some WHB?
Yes.
Go for it.
So, WHB. For April, to honour the 40th birthday of the beloved ZX Spectrum, we decided that we would play a ZX Spectrum game. But to narrow it down, we thought we can't just have the whole of the 12,500 or however many Spectrum games have ever been made. We decided that we'd focus on isometric games. And we ended up, after a colourful shortlist episode, we ended up with three games going through to the public vote. And we probably had the closest run poll probably we've had, at least in a while, maybe even ever. Of the 126 votes, we had Batman with 36 votes, and then a tie.
Did we have a tie? I forgot about that.
Yeah, we had a dead heat between my game, Movie, and Dean's game, WHB.
Yep.
Why didn't we play Movie? I can't remember.
Because Dean's the boss, mate. I mean, what don't you understand?
Why did you not want to play a retro game, Dean?
Oh,
it's true.
Shots fired.
It's harsh. It's harsh because WHB was the better game.
Mm.
Maybe.
Is that because it's a modern game?
So it's actually 13 years old, so kind of retro.
It's kind of retro.
Kind of retro. Just like the PS3 is retro, eh? No. I think we all agreed, actually, joking aside, that WHB, there would be something cool about playing an inverted commas, a modern specky game to celebrate its 40th anniversary and to celebrate the longevity of the amazing system. And also, it's a pretty cool game. Dean?
Can I just say as well, though, I'm not sure. Disappointed, only 126 votes.
Yeah, there is some...
The amount of listeners we get, a lot of people seem to ignore this.
So I think there may be one explanation for that is that there wasn't a huge period of time for the votes.
No, I guess not. But even so, come on, guys, this is the ZX Spectrum. You could have had your say.
Yeah,
Movie might have won.
The last time we voted on a Spectrum game when we ended up playing Manic Miner, I think that was the most, other than Steve's ransacking of one of the votes.
That was Dodonpachi.
For Dodonpachi. That was the Manic Miner was the most votes we've ever had. So, yeah, probably a little bit surprised.
Yeah, I'm surprised. But
those 126 people voted. They couldn't decide between them.
Mm-hmm. No.
And in fact, Batman, up until the last day, Batman was top for a while during the month as well. So it really was a close run thing. But I think we agreed that there was something very cool looking about WHB. And I'm for one, although I would have loved to have played movie, and obviously I can play it whenever I want, but I would like to have spent some time with that. I think I'm glad in the end that we chose WHB.
Hmm.
So Mads, you're very good at this.
Yes.
What is WHB?
So WHB is a puzzle game where you, in each level, you have these like squares that you can move around on the playing field. And you are, what are you, a rectangle? So you're like two squares big, and you can topple it over. So it's like you have this block that you can push in either of the four directions. And sometimes you'll be lying down so that you need to roll around. Sometimes you'll be standing up. And you need to move this block from one end of the level to the other till you get to the, I guess, the teleport to the next level. That's how I'm reading it anyway.
Yeah, like a goal, isn't it? Yeah.
And doing that can be quite hard because you need to position yourself correctly in these levels that where it's very narrow spaces you need to get through. So often there will only be one or two right solutions to which kind of movements do you need to do to actually get to the place where you want to be. And then we add a lot of nice complexity by having switches, some switches that you can just lie on, some that you have to stand on, crumbling floors that disappear when you walk on them, a block that splits your rectangle into two squares instead that you then can control and switch between using the button, and lots of added complexity that just makes for some really interesting puzzle design.
Yeah. Well done. Good stuff. And how did we all play it? I played it on a plus two, which was very nice. How did Dean, how did you play it?
I've played it on my Next and on the Mister.
Yeah, nice.
So I initially picked this up and played it at the cottage in an emulator. I forget which emulator. But with my USB Competition Pro.
Yeah.
So I played with a joystick all the way through.
Oh, cool. That'll be interesting to hear how that controlled with the joystick then.
That was really nice. Really, really nice. After that, I played through it on the Mister because I wanted to see it on the CRT. And I tried to do that with a gamepad, and that was hard to wrap my head around. With a joystick in hand, I'd just tilt the joystick 45 degrees and everything would seem natural.
Ah, okay.
But on the gamepad, it didn't really click for me.
No.
Which I'm sure I would have had the same problem if I had done it with the keyboard, then otherwise, it would be pretty much the same, I think, as the D-pad.
Yeah.
So the joystick just worked for me.
So this is a game that's available on itch.io from Bob Smith, the creator of Bob Smith's itch page, which is bobstuff.itch.io. He's got loads of games on there.
Yeah.
When you get it, you get a TZX file. And I played it on a plus two with my Div MMC.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that doesn't play TZX games. So I was a little bit worried about this. And then I fired up the Next. In fact, I think I fired up the Next first because I was going to play at the same time. Sun Team just released, Paul Weller just released his new adventure game around the start of April as well. So I thought I'll play it on the Next and then I can play Paul's game as well. But obviously, I haven't got an accelerated Next. So I couldn't play the TZX file. So I got the plus two out, thinking, oh, that'll work with the Div MMC. But no, you can't play TZX files on the Div.
Are you sure you can't? I thought you could load them.
No. No. I couldn't load that one anyway.
Right.
So I was just doing some idle Googling online and just found this online utility that apparently, and converts TZX files to TAP files.
Yeah.
And it worked.
Yep.
Right.
much to my surprise, it worked. So by that time, the plus two was out and plugged in and everything. I couldn't be bothered unplugging it and getting the next back out. So I played it on my plus two, which was nice, using the keyboard, which is interesting. We will come on to controls. But it was, it worked well. It worked well from there. And it was nice playing it on original Speccy hardware. 48K game, this. So you could play it on the very, very original Speccy, provided you had the 48K model. But it is, again, pretty cool that we were playing a game that could have been played on 1982 hardware, released in 2009, being played in 2022. There's something really cool about it.
Did you notice how he got all of those numbers in there, Dean?
Very Once good. Again. Yeah, yes. I'm very impressed. He got them right.
And he got them right,
makes
yeah.
a change.
That's not nice, is it? That gets me back for the comment about you not liking retro games. So just to give the credits for this game, we just mentioned that it was created and coded and designed. Although I say designed, and the game, Bob Smith says himself on his Itch page that there are... This kind of game is pretty common within the homebrew indie scene on the internet. He says so himself, and he said that he had seen a similar game on another platform and thought it'd be nice to bring a game like this to the Speccy. But it was Bob Smith who coded it, and he did all the graphics, the audio. There's some really nice beeper tunes on this and on its successor, XYZ. But the beeper little stings and tunes when you beat a level or you die or right at the start of the game, that was done by an artist called Mr. Beep. Mm-hmm. I don't know his real name, but it was Mr. Beep in the game. The name came... Does anybody know what the name WHB stands for?
With, someone did say, didn't they?
With Height Breadth? Channel.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, it. Yeah.
Did you think that's right?
That was my guess, at least.
Because it's width, it's W asterisk H asterisk B, isn't it, to give it its full name. That name was come up by a guy called Kev Thacker, and the level designs were really it was designed by committee in some ways, because this was all done through the World of Spectrum forums. I think from what I understand, Bob, having created the concept and created the system, invited some World of Spectrum forumites to design some levels, which is pretty cool. Kev Thacker was one of those. And the level designers credited, other than Bob Smith, are Jumping Stack, Carl Gillot, Mulder, and Snorksman, who I assume are the handles from the World of Spectrum. Yep. And that probably explains maybe some of the inconsistent level design and maybe the lack of any kind of difficulty curve, or at least an erratic difficulty curve.
So there's definitely a difficulty curve, but you're right, it goes up and down.
Yeah.
After the first 10, 15 levels, it starts to just be all over the place.
Yeah. So does anyone want to have a crack at talking about the... a bit more detail about some of the mechanics and how actually the thing works?
No.
I can do that. No worries. No, but as I explained before, you just need to, if you need to roll this little block or rectangle around this, and in each level there's a target you want to reach, because every time you touch your joystick it and move the block in either of the four directions, you'll use one step. And there's always a target amount of steps that you should be able to get through the level in.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you guys, but I didn't really pay too much attention to that. I was just having fun, just being all over the place with that block there, trying to make it stand in the correct place so I can get further on in the levels. But yeah, it's when you press up, I think it goes northwest, right? And when you press down, it goes southeast. So you need to get used to those controls, and if you press right, it'll go northeast, right? So as you just need to take your joystick and twist it 45 degrees.
That's if you use a joystick.
If you use a joystick, yeah. So I did that, and then it felt natural, and then it just it's really just about getting through all of these levels. And there's what makes them fun is all of the special blocks. Yeah. I mean, I already mentioned some of them, but there are also there are some blocks where you can't be standing on your
They're the glass blocks, yeah, aren't they?
You need to roll sideways over those.
Yeah,
and there are teleport blocks as well, aren't there?
Yeah, splitters, teleports,
and splitters,
crumbling floors, and the switches. I think is the and then you can there's an action button, isn't there, which allows, if your block is split, and this caught a few Discordites out at first, because there are some levels which you think, God, this is impossible. But what you need to realize, if you press the action button, which on the keyboard as in the on the default binds is L, it allows you to switch between your separated parts of your block.
Even playing it with the joystick, I didn't figure that out immediately. It's just a button, of course.
Just a fire button, yeah.
But I wasn't using the button for the first many, many levels. And then you get to a level that splits you up. And I think the first one you get to, you can actually get through without using the fire button.
Yeah, it only comes in, one of the level 6 or 7, I think.
Yeah, and then later on, you need to actually split between them. When your little block is split into two squares, they'll often be teleported to either sides of the board, and you need to get them together again. And as soon as they stand next to each other, they'll merge into the one big rectangle again. Yeah. And often you need to be to plan ahead and get them merged at the right spot.
You've got to be in a certain place, aren't you?
Yeah. Get them merged at the exact right spot, and then you can actually stand and find the teleport to get out of there. But there's also, of course, a button that is very important, and you need that quite quickly, and that's R.
Yeah, because, reset.
You need sometimes to just reset. And in this game, that's immediate. So it just happens immediately when you press R, and that's good because you will get you into dead ends and so on in a game like this.
Don't press Q.
That just quits?
Q is the bad button, that'll just quit.
Okay.
And if you've not written down the passcode, you are doomed, my friend.
Yeah.
You can redefine your keys, though.
Yeah. So,
in case that puts anyone off who hasn't played it yet.
So, Dean, talk about the keys then, and how you found them, because the default key binds are Z, X, K,
M. Yeah, I redefined the keys. So I used Q and A for... what did I use it for?
Up and down.
It's up and down, and then
OP.
I use P and L for the other direction.
Oh, right. So you had like two sets of up and down keys.
Yeah. Yeah. And I found that worked for me. I had space as the action button. I think I've probably done T for the reset and the quit. I can't remember what I used, but I'd never press that. So, it is tricky.
Yeah,
I did try it with a joypad. Mads is totally correct. It just does your head in. I wish I hadn't I didn't have a joystick plugged in, a proper traditional joystick. And thinking about it, Mads is absolutely right.
Yeah.
You just twist it a bit like Q-Bert in the arcade, That's all they had done in the arcade machine was twist the joystick around slightly so it worked that way. And it works very similar thinking about it. But the thing for me is I'd played a game that is based on WHB. It's a clone for the Vectrex called Blocks. And that just uses a traditional Vectrex controller.
Yeah.
And, you press up and you go up. It works so much better with this. But when you try, the controls are set up different on this game. On WHB compared to Blocks, so it just makes it very hard. I'd played WHB afterwards and got right into it. That's why I suggested the game. But then I returned to Blocks on the Vectrex, and it controls so much easier. But it's,
why though? I don't understand how it can be different.
It's just I don't know. I need to compare the two next to each other and try and explain it.
Yeah, and people did struggle with the controls, and I can understand why. And I think when I first fired it up, I was forever. I did get a bit frustrated because.
I think once you've had a bit of practice to it and you remember what key's doing what, and you've got to think about what you're doing anyway on the game,
It's
otherwise,
puzzle-based.
You're just rolling around forever, aren't you?
You're
not getting it. You have to, sometimes look at the screen, figure it out quickly, and then try it.
Yeah.
I think the game was also quite, don't know if easy is the right word, but quite forgiving in that you couldn't fall off the board.
No.
If it had been possible to fall off the board, I would have sworn a lot of fun.
It's funny, because with the Vectrex version, you can.
Yeah, yeah. So you need to be a lot more careful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
maybe that's why they figured out a better control system. I don't know.
But it could be.
It's definitely easier on there, but yeah, you make a mistake, you fall off. Yeah.
That is a really good point, actually, because there are times when you will, particularly when you first start, you will press the wrong button and what you mean to do won't happen. And if you could fall off the world,
it'd drive you insane.
I'm not sure I would have been able to stick at it, to be honest.
In later levels where there's lots of glass or those crumbling parts as well, I would often by accident die because I stood up on the glass, for example. But then you just need to be a bit more careful. But if I had been falling off the board from the get-go, I'm not sure I would have stuck with it, actually.
No, I don't think I would. Great. The only thing I would say is that by the time you get to that point where one false move can put you in trouble, well, for me anyway, and I think obviously everyone's different, but for me, I was so used to the controls that it felt like, by that point, it felt like that was my mistake.
Yeah,
that's true. If I did something like that and I kind of didn't get cross with the game or cross with myself. Because there are situations at the end, as you say, Mance, where you have got to be so careful. And if you do go put the block on it on its end, then you will die. And then if you do that, then you're just right back to the start. But I left the keybinds on default, and I think whatever way you choose to play it, whether it be with the controller or you redefine, I think it's just a question of getting used to it, I think. And learning to speak.
I think so too. Definitely on our Discord forums, people seem to swerve to the keyboard side of things, and a lot of them remap like you did, Dean, to make it fit a bit more in their heads. But I think that the joystick worked as well, for me at least.
Yeah, I think I will have to give that a try. I'll dig a traditional joystick out and give that a go, see how I get on with it.
Yeah,
that was quite nice. But speaking of Discord, a lot of our people, our friends there on Discord, actually finished this game this month. That was nice to see. One of them is Riz, who actually streamed the entire game. That was fun seeing him struggle with some of the levels that I've already finished. And he sent us a clip, so let's just listen to that now.
Hey, everybody. This is Riz, aka King Kong Groover. The titular Welsh hairy bloke. And we'll go for that. Here to give my thoughts very quickly on WHB. First of all, apologies. I'm currently at a train station and currently trying to muffle out sound, so this is why I'm speaking like this. It was a solid game. Really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed this month. I'm not a Spectrum gamer. I was brought up more as a Commodore 64 was my first computer, so I always struggled with Spectrum games with their monochrome graphics and lack of sound, so I do not have the nostalgia as other people do with Clive Sinclair's machine. However, really enjoyed it. It was good to get a later game. The puzzle element was great. It was really, really cleverly done. I did really enjoy playing through the game. Again, not particularly the hardest game in the world, but a fun way to spend a couple of hours this month. I did play the sequel, X equals Y equals Z, and whilst I liked the gameplay element more, I thought the puzzles weren't quite as nice. They kind of resulted to using the rotating puzzle a lot, but as a gameplay element, it was right up my street, and I really, really enjoyed that. It was a really, really good, well-coded, fun puzzle game. Probably needed slight criticism, would probably be the difficulty curve was a bit all over the place. Sometimes you could just get stuck on a level for, 10 minutes, and then the next time you just complete it straight away. So, yeah, that was a bit meh. But apart from that, really enjoyed it. Looking forward to next month. I was an Atari ST player, so looking forward to trying out the game next month. So this is the, I won't say the original WHB, but I'll speak to you all next month.
Thanks for that, Reese. I also jumped into your stream. I didn't stick around for long, but I caught a few minutes of your WHB. I think he almost got through it in one sitting, didn't he? But then he got to the last level. Did he press the wrong button?
I didn't see that part.
Did he press Q instead of R or something? I'm sure something happened.
Frustrating if he did.
Well, thankfully for him, he was writing down the passwords, because you do get a password after every level, so you can record your progress, and I've got mine all written down here. And just want to, you know, I love a number. Just want to talk about these steps thing, because you do get a, as Mads has said earlier, you get a target, like a par number of steps in which the game tells you you should be able to complete the level. Man, on pretty much every single level, I was so far over the number that it's not even funny.
So for some of the levels where the number would be 20 to 30, I'd sometimes try to see, okay, let's see if I can do this in the minimum number. But if the number was 72 or 94, I would just go, there's no, I really don't want to try to maximize or minimize this. I'm just going to roll around.
But I think what it does, it does, I suppose, because it's not a huge game. It's 30 levels?
40, so, I think.
Sorry?
Wasn't it 40?
I think it was 40. Yeah,
40 levels. So it's not. Mm. I mean, it is once you get into the flow. I mean, there are one or two levels which I found really, really difficult, and I got stuck. But once you get into the flow, you can rattle through them reasonably quickly. So I suppose what the step thing does do is it does give you some replayability. Should you want to go back through having solved them the first time to really get the most elegant solution down?
That's true.
I only had one level where I got under par. I think it was about like level 34.
But you call it par. I thought it was supposed to be the minimum number of steps, but I got one or two levels under that count as well.
Yeah, so it's a target. I found it exactly what I thought of it was par. That is, you know, it's an average, it's a target.
I'm way below average.
Well, it probably is an average. But on the next one, and I posted on Discord, wow, look, I've got one under par. And then on the next level, I think I took about 550.
That's quite impressive. I mean, one place where I can often spend far too many moves is if you got a 4x4 grid, for example, and you need to just... Well, turn. It's always where you've got some narrow pathway leading to it, some narrow pathway leading from it, and you need to be standing in the exact right position when you start your walk down that pathway.
Yeah.
That rolling around trying to get stuff, I would just be
going around in circles, and then you're back where you started
forever. Yeah.
But you gave me. I was stuck, Mads, and I think we were recording on playthrough, and you gave me. My journey with this game was, I fired it up, I really enjoyed it. I thought, I'm really, really enjoy this. The first few levels, as you know, it does, the first few levels are definitely eases you in.
Yeah.
Introduces in, you know, really nicely designed. Each new level introduces a new concept. They're not overly challenging. They start to get a bit more challenging around 7 or 8, but you know, you're comfortable. And then it's almost like from level 10, it kind of says, right, you've seen all that we've got to offer. Here are now the puzzles. And at that point, I then started getting quite frustrated with it. Started really struggling to get through the levels. And then you gave me a piece of advice, Matt, was don't think about what's next. Start from the end and try and work backwards as to how you need to get there.
Yeah, that's the only real way to do the hard ones. Don't look at where you should be going right now. Start from the goal and then see, okay, backwards, what could I do here? And then, without that kind of thinking, I think I would have gotten stuck at around 14 or 15.
Yeah.
I remember one of those two I got stuck on for the longest time. Yeah. And that was because you start in the middle right-hand section. You can. It seems like the most natural thing that you need to move down and to the left, and then all the way up and around to get to the target. And I think I spent half an hour trying that in so many different ways, and I was so close, and I just needed to be just one more square up at this point to get to the narrow bridge, and I was certain I was doing something wrong, and then it dawned on me, okay, I'm just going to look at the goal. And you could immediately see that there would be no way in hell that you could get from that side to the goal. So. Okay, I need to be going the other way. And I solved it in 15 seconds, like just the first step had to be right instead of left or up or whatever you want to
call
that.
You just needed that mental shift.
Yeah, exactly. And from there on, I think I didn't really struggle with any levels. I had a lot of challenge. I mean, it was a good game, but I didn't get stuck for a long period on any levels.
Yeah. Was there any time in the game, though, you're playing it and you've solved the level, but you think, how the hell did I do that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely some of that. Yeah. There is definitely, you can just brute force your way through this, I reckon.
Yeah.
You know, if you spent long enough, I mean, there's some levels where I felt really clever. You know, right. You know, I looked at it using Manta's little plan of looking at the goal, working backwards, thinking, right, okay, well, I need to be in that position to get down that narrow path. Then need to move around and I need to get in that position because the goal is then I need to move my two blocks. How many times did you, when you had split blocks, did you join them back together but one square off to where you should have been?
Yes.
And then you've got to start the whole thing again.
Yeah.
But there were definitely levels when I just felt like I was just rolling around, not really sure what I was doing, and then all of a sudden I found myself, I've done it.
The most satisfying levels are those where you, for every single move you do, you're thinking, okay, I can do this. If I do this, you try to think like 3 or 4 steps ahead because often the pathways are narrow enough so that there's not a lot of movement actually that you can choose between. So you need to plan ahead and see, okay, if I do this and this and this, and then just try to do this little elimination game in your head. You try to remember what you've tried before because you press restart 17 times already.
Yeah.
And also try to plan ahead and see, okay, if I need to get there, I need to do this and this and this. I love those levels when they finally clicked. That was really, really satisfying. Yeah. But I would do the use because I would just be kind of rolling around and doing it a bit too quickly. I'd use the restart button very, very frequently.
Yeah.
What restart. Did you think of the graphics, guys?
It suited the platform perfectly.
Yeah, it just I think it looks lovely.
Yeah, it looks wonderful. And I loved, I mean, normally I would never say that I like the sound on a Speccy, but I loved the simple sound effects here with the little duk, duk, duk when you were rolling around. Just got me right in the mood. So it was really, really well done for what platform it was running on, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
But does look really beautiful, the clone you had on the Vectrex as well.
Yeah, that's nice looking as well.
Mm.
Yeah. Do you know what sound effect was I found really evocative of the Speccy? Is the teleport sound.
Yeah.
That little...
a bit crunchy as well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, that's a classic.
The buttons as well. I mean, the two kinds of switches. They're the ones that you need to stand on, and the one you just lie on.
Yeah.
That little crunchy sound when you press the buttons.
Yeah.
Very, very Speccy for me as well.
Yeah. Yeah, this game, the way this game sounds and looks, to be honest, you know straight away you play the Speccy game, don't you? I mean, it's just a Speccy game.
Yeah. And no color clash in sight. It's just
well, there's no nice, color in sight.
Exactly. Just nice clean lines. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks pretty, and it more importantly than how it looks is how it moves for me.
Because it's animated very nicely.
Really nice. Yeah, and there true. Is it's really simple, you know, there isn't much animation to it. You've got a block that goes on its side onto its top and rolls. But once you've been battling for a while and you get that block in the right position,
it's very satisfying.
It's really
just
satisfying.
To roll it over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds daft, doesn't it? But I'm glad you said that because I did. I was like, it's really satisfying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how many frames of animation is actually in there because I think playing something like this, my brain just switches off and it becomes completely fluid movement for me. I wouldn't even notice the number of frames. But you're right, the animation is really nice. And once you finally got your block down on the side and you need to go 10 blocks up, it's just feels good.
Yeah. I mean, could thinking about, you know, could this have been, obviously it could have been a Speccy game back in the day because it was coded on.
I think this could have been quite a big hit.
Yeah.
Can't think of anything. I mean, I know Bob says that this was a derivative of other games, but I can't think of anything like it from back in the day. Can you, Dean?
No, not really. Not really, no. I've seen other versions of the game since, but certainly nothing back then, really.
Yeah. Have you guys heard of that modern game, Something Sausage Roll?
I heard it mentioned on Discord.
Yeah. That's what others have said. There's a modern game is somewhat similar.
Mm. Okay.
But it has really lit a fire in me for these indie puzzlers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really, really like them.
I do love my puzzle games as well. Yeah. I'll actually be looking into some puzzle games quite soon on the Retro Asylum because I'm going to try some of Bitmapsoft's Game Boy puzzlers.
They've got some. Yeah,
they look nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the sequel, I know, Matt, you had a go. Dean, did you have a go at XYZ?
No, I didn't. I didn't even know it existed.
Yeah.
So before we go to the sequel, guys, let's just hear from John Shep, who sent us a clip as well about WHB.
Hi, everybody. John Shepherd here, rather unimaginatively called John Shep 100 on Discord, and I'm here to give you my thoughts on last month's Game Club game, WHB for the ZX Spectrum. I'll start off with a rather shocking admission. This is the first ZX Spectrum game I have ever played. At the time of the 8-bit computers, I had a Commodore 64, and so did everyone else around me. So thank you to the Game Club for prompting me to finally tackle this rather huge gaming black hole. WHB is an isometric puzzle game that tasks you with the simple goal of getting your playing piece to the exit. A great deal of what makes this so tricky comes with the playing piece itself, which is a rectangular cuboid, twice as tall as it is wide. You can move it in any of the four directions, but it can't hang off the board, so, for example, thin paths need to be negotiated lengthways. Other sections of the playing field can't take the full weight of the block, so can only be traversed lying down. Soon, switches, bridges, teleporters, and playing areas that crumble as you cross them are added, bringing with them increasing levels of difficulty and frustration. Some teleporters even split your playing piece into two separate cubes, which can move independently, although you do need to combine them again before reaching the exit. And to top it all off, you must land on the goal with your full block. Reaching the goal but lying on your side is close, but not close enough. I really enjoyed this game. After the zany lateral thinking of Day of the Tentacle, I found the cold, hard logic of WHB was a breath of fresh air, and it certainly is a better fit for how my brain works. The game is based on a fairly simple idea, and perhaps not a hugely original one at that, but the execution is spot on, especially considering the limitations of the system. The graphics are clear and functional, which may sound like faint praise, but in a game that is entirely based on visuospatial reasoning, being able to see clearly where everything is and what it does is absolutely essential. Personally, I found the stark isometric graphics had a real charm to them. The sound design is also fairly bare bones. There is a tune that plays over the title screen, which is pretty catchy, but the little jingle that introduces each round was less endearing to my ears. In-game, there is no music. Your block moves around with an initially satisfying click, but as I started to rack up hundreds and then thousands of moves, the effect began to wear a little thin. Ultimately, I decided to turn off the sound and listen to my own music. But that may be partly down to the way I played. You see, I found this game utterly compelling, and I ended up playing through the whole thing in just one sitting. As each new level came up, I couldn't resist giving it a try, and then I found I couldn't stop until I'd worked out the solution. Watching the cuboid sink into the goal was immensely satisfying, and then curiosity would take over to see what the next level had in store, and so on, until I found that I had finished all 40 levels. WHB is relatively short, but on the upside, it doesn't have any padding and it doesn't outstay its welcome. It does seem like the kind of game that could be easily expanded with a level editor, but again, I guess the memory constraints are quite significant here. And if you do find yourself finishing WHB a bit too quickly, you can always do what I did and move straight on to its sequel, X equals Y equals Z. This uses the same graphics and concept, but with a twist this time that you are indirectly controlling your cube instead using instructions placed on the floor. I found it a bit more challenging than WHB, but well worth a playthrough if you enjoyed the original. As always, my thanks to Chris and Mads for another great Game Club, and thank you all for listening. Bye for now.
Okay, thanks, John Shep. hot off the press. That clip has literally just come in as we record now, literally just this minute come in. Mm. So good man. Thank you very much. XYZ then was released 5 years later. Again, it's a specy game. It's a 48K specy game. And it's similar to WHB, but also very, very different.
Yes.
And Mads, how would you just describe the fundamentals, the overview? We're not going to go into too much detail on XYZ, but...
So it's still isometric, but now you are a square, right?
Yes.
Yes. It's still isometric, but you are a square, and you don't have direct control anymore. The square will just continue rolling in some given direction, and you will be placing down blocks to guide the square.
It's an icon-based interface, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So you'll be moving around the game board, placing a turn right block or a jump or whatever. You can place all kinds of different instructions for it. If you've ever played Robo Rally, have you played that, the board game?
Yeah.
Very much like that, I think.
It's a good comparison,
because it's got a live playing board that's got stuff moving around that you need to consider as well when you place down your bricks or whatever you call them, your commands. And then, so pretty much for me, like a single player Robo Rally. And it's I have to admit, I only found time to play the first four or five levels. But apart from the slightly cumbersome controls, I really enjoyed the puzzle design of it.
Yeah, yeah. So I got a reasonable way into XYZ. I got to about level 15, I think. And it's a shorter game, so there's fewer levels than WHB. In some ways, I kept flipping and flopping between which game I like more. If the Specky had a mouse, or XYZ was a PC game and you could control it with a mouse, I don't think there'd be any doubt in my mind that I would prefer XYZ.
The Spectrum does have a mouse.
Well, this game doesn't support it.
Yeah.
I didn't know the Specky had a mouse.
It can have a mouse, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, this game, as far as I'm aware, doesn't support the little known ZX Spectrum mouse. So you can only control with the keyboard. And as Mads said, you don't have direct control over the square. So you haven't got to worry about directing the square through an isometric plane. But you do have to worry about navigating your way through these through this icon menu. And even after spending 2 or 3 hours with the game, I never truly got used to it. Always selecting the wrong thing, putting the wrong thing down. But in terms of the mind-bendinginess, if that's a word, and is now.
It is now.
Of the puzzles, there are some puzzles I would just sit and look at comfortably, 10, 15 minutes, just sitting looking at the board. And it had this, an Incredible Machine vibe in that you could set down your arrows, reverse direction, you could set it to teleport, flip 90 degrees, and you basically start the thing in motion and let your scheme of trying to get to the goal play out. Similar to Incredible Machine, where you'd set up your Rube Goldberg machine, you'd hit play, and the thing would resolve itself, and you'd either solve the puzzle or you didn't. So there was an iterative beauty to the way in which your solution would evolve from, you might just say, right, okay, well, I need to do something here. I'm kind of stuck. So you might say, well, I'll put a couple of arrows down, just see what happens. And then through that, you'd say, oh, yeah, see what that did there. Okay, I can see that goes there. So we'll do that, maybe do that. And some of my favorite levels on WHB are the ones which look, and there's a few of these, looks really complicated. A big board, really complicated, loads of stuff. But actually, the solution is just dead simple. If you just need to find it. But when you do find it, it may well be that the target's like 9 steps, but you could go all round the board. XYZ is very similar to that. There's a good few levels which the solution, what seems obvious is what you shouldn't do. And you need to think laterally and think, okay, well, it's kind of telling me I should be doing that, but I know that if I did it this way, I can get it. It is well worth checking out. But the huge caveat, and it's such a shame, is that the user interface, for me, doesn't really work.
Okay.
But it's a great game.
Yeah, I need to spend some more time with it myself because, I mean, I did think the interface was a bit cumbersome, but I really enjoyed the puzzle design, so I need to dive into that. And a lot of our Discord members have said that they they even prefer XYZ to XYZ to WHB. So,
yeah, I think in the end, I found WHB just a little bit easy, to be honest.
Yeah, I guess if you just sit down, don't have any breaks, you can do it in two and a half hours.
Yeah, people certainly completed it very quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
First day, wasn't it, really?
First day, yeah. Some did, yeah. There's always one.
But there's always somebody, yeah.
But I think once you... If the difficulty on WHB peaks around level 15, 16, 17. And then it's like almost like you learn the language of the game after that. And once you've learned the language of it, I found that I was just flying through the later levels. Every now and again, there'd be one that would stump me and I'd have to spend a bit more time.
But you still enjoy the puzzle solving?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's still very satisfying to do it, for sure. I mean, there's no doubt. Yeah, every one, you get that lovely sound effect when you get to the home. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. But I didn't ever really feel challenged too much. Whereas XYZ, once you've gone through the first five or so levels, you really have to get, you really have to use your noodle.
Okay.
Okay. So, mind you, I'm a simple creature when it comes to this stuff. But I fell off it because I got into Final Fantasy and then everything other than sleeping and eating went out the window. To some extent.
You had some nice numbers to look at going up
The numbers just really do it for me.
They do.
XYZ doesn't have the same, it doesn't have a target step because it doesn't work like that. It's similar but very different. But again, it looks nice. And interestingly, the engine, the graphics engine has improved a little bit as well. So there's whizzy graphics effects on the menu, which if you're into that side of things on the specy, I think you'll quite appreciate. Well worth checking out. Has anyone ever played anything else Bob's got quite a big library on itch. Have you guys ever? I'm really intrigued, having played these two, to check out some of his other bits.
I haven't. I've seen them. As I'm a member of World of Spectrum and Spectrum Computing, do see stuff posted about a bit.
He coded,
WHB was the only one that I've ever tried, strangely enough.
He coded Melchior's Mansion, Dean.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. That really intrigues me.
Yeah, I mean, that looks lovely, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. So, that's a 128K game, isn't it?
Who's the guy who was doing the PC version, who's always at Revival? Richard Jordan.
Richard Jordan, yeah. He done Class of 99, School Days. Not the original School Days.
No, the remake.
The remake, yeah.
Because he was showing off.
He's a good guy.
He's a really nice guy. Bloke. He, a couple of revivals ago, or last but one I went to, he was there showing off a full colour Steam version of Melchior's Mansion. Yeah.
Which is out now. That's ready. The Spectrum Next version's not been completed yet, but that's in the works again.
It can't be too far off, can it?
Yeah, well, it was cancelled at one stage, but it's back on, so.
Yeah. But I definitely recommend checking out Bob's stuff. He does a lot of ZX81 coding as well.
Yeah.
So he's got some really nice stuff. In fact, there's a Zelda clone. You'd like this one, Dean. A Zelda clone. ZX81.
Yeah.
Action-adventure game. Amazing.
Well, you can see how talented he is, just by WHB. It's coded well. The presentation's nice. As you say, the sequel sounds like he's improved bits. And these are quite old games, you know, so his newer stuff's going to be even better, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm looking at his oldest game on his itch page. It was 1989. So he was coding even really back when the specy was a commercial thing.
Yeah.
That's a game called Stranded. And I think his most recent one is earlier this year.
And that was a puzzle game as well.
That was a puzzle game, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
He's got lots of puzzle games here, and shooters and action games, yeah.
Looks like his most recent one is a game called Shrooms, which was released towards the end of last year. ZX81 clone of Centipede.
Nice.
So, we're checking out.
Certainly check those out.
And we need to do more of featuring some, especially now with our... with our friendship, don't know what to call it,
with
Bitmapsoft, and having access to a lot of these incredible, some of these incredible indie games. Other publishers are available, but Bitmapsoft seems to be a very popular one with the game creators themselves.
Mm. Yeah.
But it's going to be really good, and I think where we can, I think we ought to try and showcase some of this stuff in the game club as well, where we can have a proper deep dive into the game and really get into detail with them.
Yeah, good idea.
Because there's some great stuff being made. Any closing thoughts on WHB?
I still need to complete it, but I'm the only person.
How far did you get in all honesty?
Was,
come on.
I think
level
it
three.
Was... No, it was level 17, I think.
Okay. It's probably that's the kind of hump.
Yeah, I think 14, 15, that's where it really starts to kick in. So you've got some of the end game stuff as well there.
But, it's one of those games, as you say, sometimes it feels like you're sailing through it. Other times you get stuck and you're just retrying the same level over and over. And I think 17, I think it was level 17 I got stuck at. And
the beauty of a puzzle game is when you know the answer, it should seem easy, shouldn't it?
Yeah, I should have been writing the codes down, because I returned to it this morning for the first time in a few weeks, and I know what we were saying about the controls. I know, but just using those controls again, I was struggling again.
Yeah,
you know,
to get
just
back
for
into
a few
it.
Minutes. Yeah.
Well, I've got all the codes, so if you want to play it and you want to go back to the level you were at, or you want to cheat, but we wouldn't advocate cheating.
Me? I don't even use save points.
You'd be only cheating yourself.
Well, there you go. I'll work my way back through the game. I enjoy it.
Yeah, but it doesn't take long, especially on those early levels. And can be quite relaxing once you're into the flow of it, actually. Good. WHB. Book closed.
Yes. A wonderful little game. Or a darling game, just to use John from Retro Game Squad's new favorite word.
What does he say? What does he call it?
He likes to call them some darling game. I think he says something like that.
That's a nice way of.
And do check out the Vectrex game, which is called Blocks.
If you've
got access to a Vectrex.
Presumably that was post 2009 then, if it's based on WHB.
I think it's 2013 that came out, yeah.
Okay. Blocks. Nice recommendation. In May, Mads is going to have a rest. He's putting his feet up for a month from the game.
A well-deserved break.
Well-deserved break. And I'm going to be joined in May by our old friend Paul Monaghan.
Woohoo!
Friend of the show, former host, occasional guest, and all
likes
round.
To talk about magazines a lot.
Yeah, I'm going to
warned.
I'm going to ban him from talking about magazines.
Yeah,
I'm going to say you can't allow. No, I can't do that, because he's now he's living his best life, as he's now actually writing for magazines, which is brilliant for him. What he's always wanted to do. So we'll hear lots about. Amiga Addict and the Sega magazine.
Not too much.
I'm sure we'll hear lots about them when he joins me at the end of May. But one of his other passions as well, other than magazines, is also the Atari ST. He was one of the fortunate few that had the Atari ST rather than an Amiga back in the day. So he's a big advocate of the machine. And he will be joining me to look at some Atari ST games. Now, we failed miserably in trying to coordinate diaries for the shortlist episode. We had a date. He couldn't make it then, because he had a cold. And then we set another date, which I then completely forgot about. So he messaged me and said,
Very professional.
Are we going on to record? I was like, oh dear, I completely forgotten. So it was about an hour after we were due to start. I looked at my messages and there's Paul saying, I'm here. Whoops. Sorry, Paul. So we were running out of time. So we ended up going straight to the shortlist. Now, the vote is still going on as of today, because it's the 1st of May. But because we didn't launch it until the 29th, we decided we'd give it just a couple, another day.
I think you can safely announce the winner. Actually.
Yes, I think
so
we can.
So maybe we should just do that.
Because even though it has got a few more hours to run, last time when I looked at it this morning, Dungeon Master, I think, had some, like 59% of the vote.
Yes.
So we
I voted for Hunter.
Yeah.
You put odds on there.
No, well, I was going to put OIDS on there, but I worried about whether we could get a month out of it. I did, yeah. Although it's a very good game.
Yeah.
I chose Captain Blood and what else did I choose? Captain Blood and
that's a bit Star too Glide. French, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I do like a French game, though.
Yeah, Captain Blood and Starglide are the that's two right. games that nobody votes for.
I'm surprised that very few people voted for Starglide. I mean, that's the spiritual predecessor to Star Fox.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit surprised about that. Paul went with Hunter and Dungeon Master. And Dungeon Master is going to be the resounding winner.
Hunter's a great game.
Yeah.
I've not played the ST version. It's good on the Amiga.
So supposedly it's even better on the Atari ST. So
it
like
might well be that. Because some of these games did run faster on the ST than did the Amiga.
Yeah. I mean, I really liked Hunter on the Amiga, but let's face it, it didn't run very fast.
No, it wasn't a fast game.
No.
No. Well, I went with games where the lead platform was Atari ST. So my two were games that were made for the Atari ST and then ported to other platforms. Starglide was ported to pretty much everything, including the 8-bit machines. Dungeon Master is a very, very famous game, but it's one that I've never played. Never played it. So I'm looking forward to it. And it comes with
your
a novella.
Sort of game, I would have thought.
Yeah, so my kind of game.
And it comes with a novella, as you said, like Midwinter and,
Exile.
Exile, yeah.
I love a novella. So I've been reading that last couple of days. It's about 50 pages long, so it's pretty chunky.
Oh, cool.
So I've been reading that, and I'm looking forward to getting into it, actually. Dean will be there with me, joining me on my on my journey through the dungeon. But there's so much out there. Like, there's so many expansions for it, and then obviously there's the sequel, Chaos Strikes Back. So there's plenty of Dungeon Master to get into. Not that we're going to go through it all this month, but we'll have a good old explore of the base game. And I, for one, am certainly looking forward to it. Fired up the Atari ST. I bought the Atari ST a couple of years ago from one of our Discord members, but I can't remember for the life of me who it was. I put something on Discord yesterday saying, who was it?
What model is it?
It's the STFM, 520 STFM.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know whether it's just coincidence, but with the Amiga, I always find that it's a little hit and miss. It's better with the 500 than the 1200, but with the GoTech, you fire up a game and it always feels a bit hit and miss as to whether it's actually going to run. Feels like everything I launch on the ST with the GoTech works.
Yeah.
Fewer compatibility issues, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I'd agree.
And the first game I load up, as always, whenever I fire up a 16-bit computer, is Lemmings. And that plays nicely on the ST, but man, the sound, when you're used to the Amiga version.
See, I quite like the AY chip, being a specky boy, so...
Yeah, but mate, when you're used to those glorious sounds on the Amiga.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a far cry.
So I've got actually the Atari ST version of Lemmings standing right here.
Yes.
That's the one you guys got me that Mike Daly signed for.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It still plays really well, and it looks just the same as the Amiga version. Maybe a little less colourful, but it looks pretty much the same.
Yeah.
But the sound is a huge drop off, I think, from the Amiga version. But we won't be talking about Lemmings. We'll be talking about Dungeon Master, and that looks the part and sounds the part on the ST as well. Feels like that's where really that was its home. It seems. So that's where we'll be. Towards the end of May, when Paul Monaghan joins me.
Wonderful.
So, guys, shout outs before we sign off. Dean?
Alex Crowley, Paul Higgins, Steve and Matt. Anyone else? Everyone who I know out there, hello, and hope everything is well.
Mad shout outs?
Yeah, you were talking about the Incredible Machine just a couple of minutes ago. The probably the game that the name you associate with that game is Jeff Tunnell. It's a Dynamics game, but Carl has recently interviewed Damon Sly, which was his business partner, the developer that did a lot of these games, and great stuff. I really love Carl's interview. So shout out to Carl from Video Game Newsroom Time Machine. And shout out to my friend who I was playing a game with yesterday when his 1,500-pound GPU just said, and the magic smoke was let out.
Oh, God.
And it's of course it's just reached at the point where he can't just return it. So
oh, brilliant. God. Brilliant. That's grim.
Yes. Yes.
Bad news. Shout outs for me. Hi to Steve and Matt, as usual. Andy and Jim over on Playthrough. If you do want to listen to us on Playthrough talking about modern and middle-age games, you can do that by subscribing to the Playthrough podcast. We're just winding up our series on Horizon Zero Dawn, just having a look at the DLC on that. And soon we'll be playing The Wolf Among Us, the game that kind of spans a couple of generations. Originally an Xbox 360 and PS3 games. That's next for us. Mads and I are over there as well. Shout out to Jamie from Bitmapsoft, of course, for we've been appreciating getting to know him over the past couple of weeks. And all of our lovely listeners and Discord members, such a pleasure, as always, to be part of this wonderful community. Gents, that's it from us. Until we next have a Specky game, Dean. Thank you for being
part. I'll be on before then, hopefully.
Part of the game club. We'll have you back.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we'll have you back next time we have a Specky game. And Mads, see you in a couple of months.
Yes.
Enjoy your break.
I will.
We need to think about what we're going to do in June. In the past, I don't know whether we normally have listener's choice in June or July. I need to just look back.
Yeah, I forget.
But
yeah.
We'll be doing something for sure.
We'll figure something out.
Yeah, definitely. Right, guys, that's us. See you next time, listeners.
Take care, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
From now on, unlike your parents were, you are the secret force of Retro Asylum.
Playing so fast, they're the only ones who can take you back in time. They play old games, they're more retro than J1 Optimus Prime. At home or the arcade for adventures.